Good morning, Damien. You're here to talk about the Sydney Elders online exhibit, now showing on the State Library website.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Sally.
And the experience begins with the line, "In Aboriginal communities, our elders are our libraries. They hold our knowledge and connect us to our past while strengthening our future." And who are these elders that we meet in the Sydney Elders exhibition?
Yeah, so the Sydney Elders exhibition, which originally launched as a physical exhibition and has now been kind of translated online, focuses on four elders from around Sydney. So Uncle Dennis Foley, Auntie Esme Timbury, Uncle Charles Chickamadden, and Auntie Sandra Lee. And these are four elders from different areas around what we now call Sydney, and with different histories and experiences relating to the building and the growth of the city that is often not acknowledged when we think about the city and walk around these built up environments.
Yeah, they come from four very distinct and different areas of Sydney. So what we know today is Western Sydney. They come from Southern Sydney. One comes from Southern Sydney. One is from Redfern. And the other is from the Northern Beaches. And one thing that really surprised me about the Northern Beaches was that Aboriginal people survived in great numbers there until the 1950s. So what were the other sort of hidden Easter eggs that surprised you about this exhibition?
Yeah, I suppose this was the first exhibition that I saw at the State Library when I moved over here from Western Australia. My family are Palawa from Tasmania, so I'm quite used to the experience of having your elders diminished or only ever recognised when people talk about ancient history or traditional culture. And then there's this kind of huge gap in what we talk about that starts up again probably in the 60s and 70s, around the time of the referendum when we re-entered the public consciousness. But we lose a lot of agency in those years in between. And what I found most striking was the way this exhibition and the work Jonathan did in particular with these elders really undermines those assumptions, really removes and kind of challenges that idea that people still carry that the city was entirely imposed upon us. I mean, obviously colonization and the build-up of Sydney and other cities was an imposition and did result in a lot of people being relocated and killed and divorced from their language and culture. But it was constantly surprising to myself and the thousands of people that were coming through this exhibition just how integral to the city, the building of the city, the life of the city, the social history of the city, even outside of things like the well-known Redfern AMS and, you know, what people think they know about La Perouse and how long people have been occupying that area. So for me, it was absolutely wonderful and definitely made me think that I might have made the right choice in moving over here to work for this library. And I definitely noticed that among the people that were visiting, and particularly Aboriginal people that could, you tend to hold your breath when you go into exhibitions about Aboriginal culture as an Aboriginal person. You tend to really expect that it's either not going to be done well or that it's not going to tell our stories the way that we tell them to each other. And what I think was the most stunning part of that was that it really did feel like you were going into these elders' lounge rooms. You were sitting with them. You were holding space with them. You were hearing things they wanted to tell you. Which is really a very different energy that you don't see in a lot of exhibitions, particularly the library, where we have a history of quite didactic, quite information and record and fact-based exhibitions. So it really was an opening up of some space and breathing room for these stories to be told.
Mm. Yeah, I noticed the very sort of slow pace of the films that Jonathan made and the beautiful golden Sydney light that he used throughout the films, and it really takes you to a emotional place. I think it makes you think about your own parents and grandparents who are of that older generation, and kind of bridges that gap between this foreign and other and different to me because of these archival photos, because you can see these landmarks that you've grown up around or you see every day, and that they saw the same things. So I found that just beautiful.
It is a really interesting idea that we've, the number of exhibitions we've worked on, particularly the last few years, really have gotten us to this point of understanding that there's a tendency to assume that only non-Aboriginal people focusing on history, you know, have a reverence for the city, can contemplate this history with all of its traumas and warts and issues, with any sense of optimism or joy. And for Aboriginal people, we've usually been relegated to dealing with the traumatic aspects, which is, you know, a huge part of it. But we do still have joy. We, you know, there were still birthdays, and people still fell in love. People still had human stories within these big movements. And I love exhibitions like this that allow us to see these humans moving through the history. And that is, you know, honestly, a privilege that has only been afforded to non-Aboriginal participants in history until quite recently. And I think it was quite surprising. We even had a school that traveled from London, I believe it was, from England to visit this exhibition specifically. So for me, that was just such a mind-blowing reversal of this colonial idea that we have people coming from the mother country to see stories about Aboriginal elders within this, what was a penal colony from their perspective. And to me, that really speaks volumes to the hunger that people have to see these stories, to know these stories, to hear, you know, the ways that we thrived and our humour and our humanity, I suppose.
And Auntie Esme Timbury, she does shell work, and Uncle Charles Chicken Madden, he makes ceramics. So were they available to be viewed in the physical exhibition?
They were, and also again started a new kind of process for the library, in which we've actually begun acquiring those sorts of materials as part of the exhibitions we work with communities on. So that beautiful shell church is actually part of the State Archive collection now. In 500 years time, that will be seen as part of the fabric of our history and part of the archives alongside these journals and documents and Western records of Sydney. That's continued through quite recently with the Dirubbin exhibition that's on presently. And really, and the Carla Dickens works that were purchased as part of the 8 Days in Kamei exhibition. So using these opportunities to not only platform and prioritise Aboriginal stories, but to take that a step further and ensure that we have a lasting record of this, that our exhibitions and our stories aren't just ephemeral and experiential, that is a really important component, but we need to leave a lasting legacy. And to be able to work with Auntie and Uncle and acquire these beautiful objects that have these incredible connections to their own cultural practice and to this broader history of Sydney is a real privilege.
And the other thing I noticed about the exhibition was that I think when some tourists come to Sydney, they come and see the harbour or they go to the rocks. But this exhibition really centred Western Sydney as well as Redfern and Southern Sydney. I was wondering what you thought about the history of these spaces in Sydney, and what can we learn from the exhibition about these other areas?
Yeah, as someone who's not from Sydney, I have to admit that since moving here, I've also been a little confused by what seems to be a very almost Macquarie Street kind of definition of Sydney. What we tend to view as Sydney comes down to, you know, 4 or 5 square blocks that you know, while they are clearly connected to a lot of history and stories, are not the be all and end all. And so there's kind of an unofficial tagline at the library, at least since I've started here, which is, you know, more than Macquarie Street. We need to represent beyond what we see now as the city. And what we view now as the city was not what Aboriginal people viewed as the city, wasn't even what non-Aboriginal people, the early settlers and colonists, wouldn't necessarily recognise what we now refer to as the city of Sydney. And I think, you know, to to bring it to what we're experiencing now, we can see the lack of support and infrastructure and acknowledgement of these communities. We can see it in the way that things like this pandemic are spreading, that we have a tendency to protect the city, but that doesn't necessarily always extend to the people who live and work or whose families lived and worked building that city and who were always on the fringes. And I think very few people still to this day understand that kind of fringe dweller, that notion that, you know, the people that were where I live in Erskineville, the history of the railroad workers, the number of Aboriginal families that lived and worked around Erskineville until that work was completed, and then they were forced out further and further away from the city. So I think if you do look historically at what we define as the city and who we price out of living there, and who we see as the leaders and the people that I identify so strongly with that central notion, that we can really look at this as this expansion of the city, but then a shrinking that seems to start to happen after about the 70s, when a lot of that infrastructure and those borders were starting to really harden up. And we saw the ways that, and it wasn't just Aboriginal families, there were a lot of poorer families that were living amongst Aboriginal people. And it's always quite surprising that the historical racism we're keenly aware of in the archive and in the way people understand how we've grown as a country, there were huge patches of time where people were just living alongside each other. There was a functional form of reconciliation that wasn't based on protocols and unpacking history and decolonizing authority the way that we do it now, but was actually just a result of people living together and working together to build the city. And I think the erasure of Aboriginal elders and their contributions has had a huge detrimental impact on how we define the city. And I know for younger Aboriginal people as well that aren't always connected to their families, it's a real point of pride. Of course, we can be proud of our culture and language, but we can be just as proud of our granddad who built railway tracks and locomotives. We don't need to choose which side of our history and whether, you know, it's purely cultural things that we can take pride in. And I think that the Elders exhibition really helped people to understand that bigger picture.
Wow, well, Davian, food for thought. Thank you so much for joining us on Carve today.
My absolute pleasure. Please jump online and have a look at the exhibition and have a look at the ways that we've kind of tried to translate that online. There are a lot of moments where you can just sit with those elders and sit with some quiet contemplation and be outside and hear the birds, which I think at the moment on week 10 of lockdown, it's a really important way that people may be able to start to empathize with Aboriginal families that throughout so much of our history were controlled by government, did have their movements restricted, weren't able to freely access country and family. And I think, I hope that coming out of this pandemic and lockdown, that we have a real point of connection and strength there amongst all of us.